Hello, sports fans, and welcome to another edition of Yesterday Sports on the Sports History Network. And make sure to check out sportshistorynetwork.com/giveaways. I have two signed books I'm giving away. One is titled No Nonsense, Old School Weight Training, and the other is Reliving 1970s Old School Football.
African-American quarterbacks are thriving in the National Football League the last couple of years, and it hasn't been that way. It's been a long, hard road to get there with some great people that have some great history. John Eisenberg has a new book out called Rocket Men, and he discusses the black quarterback's history all the way from the beginning. John's up in just a moment to tell us all about it.
This is the Pigskin Daily History Dispatch, a podcast that covers the anniversaries of American football events throughout history on a day-to-day basis. Your host, Darren Hayes, is podcasting from America's North Shore to bring you the memories of the gridiron one day at a time. So as we come out of the tunnel of the Sports History Network, let's take the field and go no huddle through the portal of positive gridiron history with PigskinDispatch.com.
This podcast is part of the Sports History Network, your headquarters for the yesteryear of your favorite sport. You can learn more at sportshistorynetwork.com.
Hello, my football friends. This is Darren Hayes of PigskinDispatch.com. Welcome once again to the Pig Pen, your portal to positive football history. And welcome to another edition where we get to talk about some great football history. And we are really going to span the globe of professional football history today, a little bit of college too, but we're going to be covering over 100 years of football history just in this one episode with an author that's been on before. We had him back in 2021 with his book, 10 Gallon Wars. His name is John Eisenberg, and he has a new book out that we're going to be talking about. John, welcome back to the Pig Pen.
Oh, well, thank you. Thanks for having me back. I enjoyed it last time. I'm sure I'll enjoy it this time. Much appreciated.
Yeah, this is another interesting subject that you talk about, and I'll let you introduce the title of the book and where people can find it. We'll do it again near the end of the podcast.
All right, great. Thank you. Yeah, the book is called Rocket Men. The subtitle is The Black Quarterbacks Who Revolutionized Pro Football. And it's just out. The publisher is Basic Books in New York, and it can be bought anywhere. It's on Amazon. It's any bricks and mortar bookstore, Barnes and Noble, you name it. It can be ordered. It's wide distribution, so you can get it anywhere. It's literally not even a week old at this point, so just getting going.
Yeah, John, as we talked about coming on, you know, I thank you and your publicist for sending me a copy to prepare for this. And I got the book late last week, and I was worried I wasn't going to get it read before we talked. And I got so engrossed in the book, it sort of took over my life. So that's a sign of a great book, when one of those ones you just can't put down. And the subject matter is so deep and so enthralling and so informative that really did a nice job. What was sort of your basis for writing about the subject? What sparked your interest on this?
Well, the book is the history of black quarterbacks, basically, in pro football, going back to the very beginning with Fritz Pollard in 1920, going through the present, Super Bowl 57 with the two black starters. So it's over 100 years of a story. And my impetus was I started writing this book 3 years ago. I'm in Baltimore, where Lamar Jackson landed. It caught my eye because Lamar, when he was coming out and going to the pros, as he got to the combine, and a scout for the Chargers said to him, "Are you going to run the 40? Because I think you'd make a really good wide receiver in the pros." And other people said things to him about playing other positions. And that's exactly what had happened to black quarterbacks going back decades. The best black quarterbacks had to change positions. And the reason why, you know, it's no secret. It was, you know, a lot of the scouts and coaches and the structure, the power structure in the NFL is white. And there was skepticism about black quarterbacks. So were they smart enough? You know, could they be good enough leaders? Did they have the discipline? Just terrible sort of race denial by stereotyping, basically. And so here's Lamar in 2018, still, we've come a long way even then, but a vestige of it. And he doesn't run the 40. He gets drafted near the end of the first round as a quarterback. He wins the MVP award in the NFL in his second season. And it just struck me to say, how did we get here? How did we get that we're a century into pro football history and we're still dealing with this situation a little bit at the most glamorous position, the pivotal position in the sport? So I thought, this is what I do. It's my 11th book. And I thought, you know, what I do is I pick a subject and it's a deep dive of research and interviews and just tell the story, find out what happened here. And so I think this one in particular, very important to shine a light on what happened, because this did happen. There were years where black quarterbacks couldn't get on the field in the NFL. And this is something that happened. I think it's especially important these days, you know, shine a light on it. Let everybody know this is the truth. This is what happened. And it makes what's happening now, you can appreciate it that much more. That the guys that are going now are standing on the shoulders of some guys who were real pioneers, and just tell that story. And so 3 years later, here it is.
Yeah, it's really quite a remarkable work. When I first saw the title and knew the book was coming, you know, I've read some other books that are on a similar subject, but none are in the detail of this and going into, I mean, you're covering, I believe you have like 30 or 40 some quarterbacks you're talking about. Maybe my numbers are off on that. I have an enormously long list of quarterbacks, even some folks that I didn't know about. And I read quite a bit of football books. So I was quite interested with that and the detail you got into them. So the research must have been enormous. And I can understand why it took you 3 years.
Yeah, I learned a lot. I mean, and I'm a student of history. I've written football history, but even still, I learned a lot. I started digging into the, you know, you go back into the 50s and the 60s and some of these guys. Sandy Stevens is a story of a guy I just didn't know that much about him. He never played in the NFL. Maybe that's why. And I'm just, I mean, he played a little before I was really cognizant of things. And so his story just amazed me, you know, as a guy, first All-American quarterback who's black. First one at the University of Minnesota. He wins the Rose Bowl, plays the Rose Bowl twice. Great college player. That's all you can say. Never played a down in the NFL and had to go to Canada to play quarterback. And the Cleveland Browns drafted him, and they were pretty forward thinking on race, but they still were going to move him. And they didn't want him. They didn't want him playing quarterback. Paul Brown didn't. So that's just, and it broke his heart. And, it's just an amazing story to see how good a guy can be to not get a chance. And so I just love digging into stuff like that. And he passed away years ago. I couldn't interview him. He died in 2000. But just telling the story, it's an amazing one, and I'm glad to bring it to modern readers.
Yeah, no, you know, being somebody that reads a lot of books like myself, you did some pretty interesting literary feats that you did here that really made the book even that much more interesting from looking at it from my bookworm nerd hat, and okay, my football historic thing. First of all, I loved how you sort of broke the book up in parts and chapters. So what was sort of your decision in doing that? And what's sort of that line of demarcation that separated the parts, I guess?
Well, I will say this is a book, as I said, I've written 11 of them. And this is one that struck. Sometimes you start in the middle and go back to the beginning and tell the backstory and then move it forward. This one, it's chronological. So it starts with Fritz Pollard, pretty much, and the first one, and just moves forward. So from that sense, I found it somewhat straightforward, fairly simple to just move forward. But you move it forward. First off with sort of, I wanted to tell the story. I thought it was really important, aside from just the race in football, the evolution of the position and how quarterbacking changed, why it became so important and how that led to black players being excluded from it. And so, you know, that made sense because that happened in the 30s and the 40s and the 50s. So you go from Fritz Pollard, the first guys, to the evolution of the position. And then suddenly you find yourself, you know, in 1960 or so. And I just singled out the guys that I felt were really important and tell these stories one after the other, moving it forward. Each one of them brought different things to the table. You know, Sandy Stevens, or a story of Eldridge Dickey, another one, a first round draft pick, never played a down quarterback in the NFL. And so slowly but surely, it moves forward. So I don't know. It made sense to me organically, you know, as a organizer of chapters. Certainly wanted individual guys to have their own chapter. Joe Gilliam in Pittsburgh, Eldridge Dickey, Oakland Raiders, unbelievable story. And just one after the other. So as long as I picked the right guys, it just sort of moved forward.
But you did something very interesting in the introduction, and it's something that resonated with me. You started it off by talking about James Harris of the Buffalo Bills in the 1960s, and you told his story, and then you came were coming back to him throughout the story. So we had a reference point. And was that sort of our barometer to take us through? Because that's sort of how I took it. You know, you took sort of a guy in the middle of maybe change is about to start happening, and you reflect backwards and forwards from that. I found that extremely interesting, too.
Yes, that was picking an introduction point, really important in a book. So people pick it up, they start reading, you know, they're standing in a store or whatever, they're looking at an excerpt online. It better sing what's there at the very beginning. And so, yes, I just had an unbelievable interview with James Harris. He's just an amazing figure. He recounts his stories so well. And I really, that's one of the last things I wrote was the introduction. So I wrote most of the book, and I just let it, as I said, 3 years. And I sort of sat there thinking, what is my introduction here? I just let it fester in my brain for a long time. And finally, it just struck me. I said, you know, his interview, what he went through is so emblematic of it and so poignant. And it's modern. It's not 19. I didn't want it to be. I didn't think writing about Patrick Mahomes in the introduction would be right, or Fritz Pollard, you know, somewhere in the middle where we're half a century into NFL football and there's still no black quarterbacks. That tells you a lot. And so he just seemed like an inflection point, James Harrison. So I settled on him, and his story is so poignant that I thought, well, I can do that and come back to it. So that's why I did. I'm glad you feel that it worked. A lot of thought went into it.
Yeah, that's a player that played a little bit before my time, and I'm in my late 50s, and I don't remember James Harris playing, but I know the name. I've heard the name because I live in the Buffalo's market here in Western Pennsylvania. And I have a lot of friends that are Buffalo Bills fans that are a little older than me that talk about him. But you told a story that I never really knew about him. And you basically are telling a lot about American culture and the historic development of race over the last 100 years, too. It's, you know, it's one of those things they say, how life imitates art, or maybe art imitates life in this sense. But really a great story beyond football, I think, with just these gentlemen who each of them had their own story, but they had a similar story in respect of they didn't get respect and they weren't able to play the position they wanted to, and that's to play the signal caller position, a quarterback. So I thought that was very interesting, and how the evolution of that went through, and you told the story so well.
Yeah, what it is, it's a story about the slow development of black leadership in America and the willingness of white power structure to give it to black leaders. Willing and competent and qualified black leaders. It just didn't happen. To me, it resonates, you know, outside of sports for sure. I always like my books to try to have some meaning beyond the playing field. This one was an easy one. I thought it was very clear because it mirrored other aspects of American society. You know, the first black CEO of a Fortune 500 company, that wasn't until the late 80s. First Joint Chiefs of Staff was black, you know, in the military. Military wasn't integrated until after World War II, and the leadership, it was the late 80s. And so, you know, the law, you name it, you know, there's also, it's been very slow for black leadership to be granted, which is what it was by the white power structure. And so this is no different. This is the prominent position and the leadership position in football, and the unwillingness of, you know, white decision makers to give it. And so, you know, it's a story of opportunity more than anything else, I think. It's, you know, that's what they craved, the players, was just the opportunity. I know I have the talent. And so, but it was just denial for so long. So, yeah, that's what it's a story about. And it definitely resonates in other aspects of American society.
We'll be back with more from this interview in just a moment right after this. Hey, during this break, I just wanted to share with you listeners, we have the Sports History Network Tailgate Fantasy Sports League going on, where we are inviting you, the listener, to come in and play with us. You would have really beat up on me pretty good this last week. I'm sort of the middle of the pack. My Steelers suffered a big loss. Nobody performed really all that well, except for TJ Watt, and I didn't have TJ Watt in that game. Probably could have scored very well if I would have done that. But you can come in and join us at tailgatefantasy.io/#SHN, or go to sportshistorynetwork.com and find our Tailgate Fantasy Sports History Network League there, and join us and see if you can beat us, because I'm coming back really strong next week, and I think you better have your game on, because my Steelers are going to be doing good, and the players I picked will be a little bit of a surprise to you. So join us there at sportshistorynetwork.com.
This is Harv Aronson of the Total Sports Recall Podcast, your source for sports news and topics from a different angle. And you are listening to the Pigskin Dispatch Podcast.
And now we return to our interview with our special guest. Some of these players, like Fritz Pollard, his story is a little bit more well-known, especially recently, because he's got a little bit more publicity and everything. But there's some players that are sort of on the outskirts there that deserve a little bit more credit, and I'm so glad that you got to talk about them. I mean, can you talk a little bit about a guy like Willie Thrower, who, you know, kind of an interesting time and interesting player?
Oh, Willie Thrower, I mean, there were in the 50s, I write about the black quarterbacks who started games, but a few of them between Fritz Pollard in the 20s and then Marlon Briscoe and James Harris in the 60s and 70s, a few guys got onto the field. They did somehow. And Willie Thrower got onto the field, the Chicago Bears. George Halas had sort of an awakening, is the best way I can describe it, on race. They were not integrated until the 50s and the Bears. And that's when black players were coming into the NFL, some good ones. And I think Halas started getting clobbered by some of these teams with black players. And he said, I think it's time. He didn't mind integrating, and he did. And so he integrated at other positions. And then he had a quarterback. And there was no stigma attached at that point. There was no thought given. George Halas, who basically ran the NFL, was the NFL. He didn't mind doing it. It's like, well, maybe he can play. Maybe he can. Thrower had been a good quarterback at Michigan State and could throw. Thrower could throw.
Yeah, yeah, he had the perfect ever. Name for a quarterback, right?
Easiest joke ever for a writer. So anyway, he put him in a game. They were behind and he moved the balls. He moved the ball some and he didn't do badly, but it was a very brief moment. And, then he took him out right before they were in the red zone. He took him out and that was the end of it. And he never played again, but he had been on the field. It did happen. There were pictures and it happened. And so, he only has his NFL, I believe is one game, a one game appearance was his career. It's like, Moonlight Graham and Shoeless Joe, what was it? One appearance, but he played. And so there was a black quarterback. So he achieved a certain moment in history. And he did say years later, I was kind of like Jackie Robinson. I mean, Jackie Robinson was a Hall of Fame player, aside from being a historic figure. I don't know that Willie Thrower was a Hall of Fame player, but he did break the color line. And it's an amazing little moment there.
Yeah, it certainly is. And one that's almost sort of a story that's very similar, but years later, and you alluded to it, it's Joe Gilliam with the Steelers, which I'm a little bit familiar with. That's right when I started enjoying football, and I'm a Steelers fan. And I can remember the Hanratty and Bradshaw and Gilliam year very vaguely, but I didn't really know the whole story that was going on there with the strike and everything. Maybe you could tell Joe Gilliam's story a little bit.
Oh, gosh, Joe Gilliam, unbelievable, really sums it up in some respects. He comes out of an HBCU in 1972. He's at Tennessee State. His dad is the defensive coordinator, a great coach, had been a college quarterback as well, that, had to change positions and had to leave a major college to go play the position at an HBCU. And so he was well coached, smart, big arm, super talent. So he goes in like the 11th round of, you know, the Steelers, who were very progressive about drafting black players. And that's why, really, why they won four Super Bowls. In many respects, they had such talent. So they drafted him, and he was so good they couldn't cut him. They already had Terry Bradshaw. They had Terry Hanratty. And he sits for a couple of years, and then there's a strike in 1974 before the season, and Bradshaw and Hanratty won't cross the picket line. Joe Gilliam will. And he starts practicing and playing through the preseason. He's spectacular. And so he wins. The strike ends. Bradshaw comes back. But Chuck Knoll says that, you know, this is going to be the starter, Joe. So Joe starts the first six games the regular season. The Steelers win four, tie one. He has some huge games, some not quite as huge games, but they're winning. But Knoll benches him. It's not football was different then. It's not like today. There's not some offensive coordinator controlling everything. The quarterback called the plays. Hard to believe today, but mm-hmm. they gave them that. But so Joe Gilliam was out there throwing. And he loved, and I think Knoll was a little unsettled by that. There were also, I mean, Joe had some issues. He had some drug problems, and they were whispered about. His talent was not the question, but anyway, he was benched. Bradshaw comes back in, and they wind up winning a Super Bowl that year and winning four. And Joe Gilliam never starts another game, but Bradshaw did say it could have been him. It could have been Joe Gilliam. Those are two guys, Southerners from small colleges. They looked at each other in training camp. And we're like, wow. You know, Joe Gilliam, before he passed away, said, I'd never seen a white guy throw like Terry Bradshaw. And I know Terry Bradshaw never seen a black guy throw like I could. And, you know, Bradshaw agreed with that. He said that guy was good, but he didn't play. Once he was benched, and it's a key part of the black quarterback story, no second chance, you know, despite the fact that he'd passed the ball over the field and clearly could move the ball in the NFL. And that was it. And so he wound up spiraling into drugs, and he cleaned himself up, but then he passed away at age 50. It's an unbelievably sad story. And, but you know, there's just no question that he had the talent to have an NFL career.
And it was really interesting how the quotes that you used were a lot of them from Bradshaw in that segment on Gilliam, and Gilliam's comments that you had were so complimentary of each other. It didn't seem like a rivalry, you know, competing for the same job and, you know, for all the glory. These guys, I don't know if they were friends, but they definitely respect each other, like you alluded to a little bit in your story.
Definitely, definitely. Bradshaw, you know, is always a great interview. And, you know, you can pluck from other ones that he's had online and find them. And he's always talking. And Joe Gilliam is just one of those figures on the horizon of this story that shows you a lot. I mean, he was fortunate. I mean, you know, number one, the Steelers gave him a roster spot. Very seldom would. And they didn't ask him to change positions. Unbelievable in 1972. That's how good he was. That more than anything tells you how good he was. It's like, this guy's quarterback. And we really don't have a spot for him, but we're going to keep him. He's that good. And then he winds up on the field, he plays, and, you know, it's just so dramatic. And he was on the cover of Sports Illustrated after his first start. The cover of Sports Illustrated back then, maybe the prime spotlight in American sports, and it said Pittsburgh's black quarterback. And it just brought the whole issue to the fore. And you can almost not believe it happened a long time ago. It's in the 70s, but it's not ancient history. It didn't happen. It happened within my lifetime. And this is stuff that was there. And that's what I mean, shining a light on this story and making sure everybody understands that this is what happened to people.
Yeah, most definitely. Now, we started to get a little bit of progress in the respect, you know, late 70s and the early 80s, Doug Williams winning. And then something I learned there, I didn't realize that Joe Gibbs was with Tampa Bay when they drafted Doug Williams. And that was a connection to bring him to Washington. So I really learned something there, which I probably should have knew, but I didn't. So I thought that was interesting. So he's the first one to win a Super Bowl. You know, then you have, you know, the Michael Vick, the first quarterback to get selected number one overall in the NFL draft. McNair shares the MVP award, and Cam Newton is the first to win it outright. And you go through this long list of Warren Moon first to go into Pro Football Hall of Fame. And that sort of takes us, these guys really broke some barriers to take us to where we are in 2023. And these last couple of years have been really monumental for Black quarterbacks. So maybe you could talk a little bit about that.
Well, they have been monumental. Certainly the Super Bowl with Patrick Mahomes and Jalen Hurts starting opposite each other, that got a lot of attention. First Black matchup of Black starting quarterbacks in the Super Bowl. That was a historic moment. And it was gratifying to, I was in the middle of this project. It was great to see Mahomes and Hurts both pay such homage to it, and understanding of that they stand on the shoulders of guys like Willie Thrower and Moon and the guys that start close. They did understand that. It has been monumental. And this past week, the week one in the NFL, I believe the NFL put out a release, 14 Black starting quarterbacks. The NFL, the league, is paying note to this. And that is certainly, if you followed this story, just an amazing thing. When Warren Moon signed with the Houston Oilers in 1984, there were none. There was zero. He was the first. I mean, there had been others, but it had been wiped clean. You know, there were none. So we've gone from zero to where we are now, and it's great. I would say this, the real change point, and there were many, you mentioned it, Michael Vick going first overall, that first generation, Doug Williams, Warren Moon, and Randall Cunningham, they were the ones that really showed all the sort of racist ideology that had existed. They were the ones that showed it's just wrong. I mean, we can play, we can win, we can take you to the playoffs, we can do a lot. And
they did it with different styles too. They weren't mirror images right. of each other. You know, they were great quarterbacks in their own respects.
Own respect. To me, the biggest change point and where to get us to where we are now, I zero in on the years of 2011 and 12. The guys that came into the league, Cam Newton, this generation, Cam Newton and Kaepernick, Colin Kaepernick in 2011. Kaepernick, you know, as a young quarterback, I thought he might be like the best thing I've ever seen when he suddenly took on that job in San Francisco and they unleashed him. He was amazing early in his career. And then the next year, Robert Griffin III and Russell Wilson, who immediately starts going to the Super Bowl. So you've got those four guys, that generation that come into the league. And until that point, NFL teams and NFL football, they wanted a prototype. They wanted Peyton Manning. They, you know, that was the ideal, a white drop back quarterback, change at the line of scrimmage and, you know, do all, you know, that's all they'd ever wanted. And it was almost held against you if you were mobile. You know, there were a few outliers like Vic along the way, but primarily they wanted that the drop back passer. That generation of guys came in. They're so good. I think finally the NFL said, we have to have mobile. We have to change what we do. We're not going to make them change to fit our system. We're going to change our systems, the style of football, and we're going to open up the quarterback position more and let them be mobile and let them run these run pass options because they can throw, they can run, they can win, they can do everything. Let's let them be them. And so I think that's the moment where it starts really accelerating to the point where we are now, where almost every team, it seems like, has some sort of mobility. You know, the quarterback position, he's on the go, he's moving around. Yeah, there's still plenty of dropback passers and they win Super Bowls. But the position has changed fundamentally. And I think it's more exciting. But I think that's when you see it. 2011, 12, that's the group that changed pro football, in my opinion.
It's interesting you say that because you made me start thinking as I was reading a book and just again now, you know, back when you're kids and you're playing sandlot football, usually your best athlete is going to be the quarterback because he can right. throw the ball, he can run everything. The NFL sort of shifted to this, maybe perhaps some of the lesser athletes on the teams were the quarterbacks standing in a pocket, throwing, you know, a lot of them statues and not mobile at all. And, you know, strong arms and you know, you have to have smarts. But now we've sort of gone back to the best athlete on the team is a quarterback again, probably right where it belongs, I think. And sometimes we understand things as children and we forget them as adults. And I think that's sort of what happened with the NFL and our memories are starting to get resurged.
Yeah, that's true.
Time.
It's like the Sandlot all over again, certainly. I don't know about you, but if I, you know, took one look at Cam Newton coming in, you know, I'm not going to tell him you got to stay in the pocket. I don't think that's a good idea. You know, put the ball in your hands. You do what you want to do with it. 6'6" or whatever he was, you know, it was just a different ball game. And let's just let the best athlete have the ball in his hands and see what happens.
Yeah, absolutely. And then, you know, what a man like, you know, Mahomes is just uncanny. I think he's an alien. He just does everything, yeah. Right? But then you have a style of like Jalen Hurts, who, you know, it was just remarkable. You know, just the short yardage. He can go out of the pocket. He can run. I mean, just phenomenal athletes. And they're, like I said, it's just they each have their own respective talents, and they get to showcase them. And it's phenomenal what's happening. So I think that's really great. Yeah.
Jalen Hurts, a second round draft pick, by the way. That you know, it tells you the little reflexes are saying why that guy didn't go in the first round. Very interesting. But, you know, you still see that to some degree. Lamar Jackson in Baltimore, where I am, barely in the first round. You know, it's changing. You know, this last draft, 3 out of the 4 top picks, black quarterbacks. And I think maybe those cases are starting to show people, you know, you maybe need to set the bar a little higher, you know, and understand that their skills can translate to the pros. And they're translating better to the pros for the reasons I said.
And they're contributing early, almost immediate, you know,
right.
In some cases, so which is really phenomenal and great for the teams that they're selected on. Now, right. John, we promised, like we did at the beginning, we want to make sure that people know where to get the book. So why don't you tell us again what the title of the book is and where folks can get it?
Yes, the title is Rocket Men, the Black Quarterbacks Who Revolutionized Pro Football. And you can get it anywhere. It's a big distribution. It's on Amazon, barnesandnoble.com. It's at a bricks and mortar bookstore. I've had people texting me saying, hey, I just bought your book in bookstore in Seattle. I'm in Baltimore. And, you know, they're all over the place. Texas, where I'm from originally. So people are finding it. It's out there. You can get it anywhere.
And it's a brilliant cover design. You got Warren Moon at the top. You got Mahomes at the bottom and the word Rocket Man right in between there. And I guess I got to ask that question before we go here. Where did the title Rocket Men come from?
It's my decision on that. And I decided, I really thought about it a lot. It's a compliment. I decided, you know what? These guys, certainly the ones playing now, Patrick Mahomes, no one would say he isn't a Rocket Man or Lamar or these guys. But I think the guys that came before him, even some of the ones who didn't play, didn't get a chance, they were Rocket Men too. You know, Marlon Briscoe, who had 5 starts for the Denver Broncos and lit it up and then was told he could never play quarterback again in the NFL, he was a Rocket Man. There's no doubt about it. So I decided to name it that as an homage to the guys that are getting to play and the guys that didn't get to play.
Well, it certainly is. And John, you did a marvelous job at capturing these men's stories over the last 100 years. I think Fritz Pollard, his story is as well told as Patrick Mahomes is. And some of those stories are still being written on some of these men. And you did a great job on it. It's a great piece of football history, a great piece of football literature. I highly recommend it and should be on everybody's bookshelf. And John, we really appreciate you for writing this book, Preserving the Football History, and for joining us today to talk about it.
Well, thanks for having me on. I really appreciate it. Love coming on here. You know, it's always a pleasure, you know, and you know, you've read the book and I take your words as high praise. I really appreciate it. Thank you.
Peeking up at the clock, the time's running down. We're going to go into victory formation, take a knee and let this baby run out. Thanks for joining us. We'll see you back tomorrow for the next podcast.
We invite you to check out our website, pigskindispatch.com, not only to see the daily football history, but to experience positive football with our many articles on the good people of the game, as well as our own football comic strip, Cleat Marks Comics. Pigskindispatch.com is also on social media outlets, Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and don't forget the Pigskin Dispatch YouTube channel to get all of your positive football news and history. Special thanks to the talents of Mike and Gene Monroe, as well as Jason Neff, for letting us use their music during our podcast.
This podcast is part of the Sports History Network, your headquarters for the yesteryear of your favorite sport. You can learn more at sportshistorynetwork.com.
Hey there, football fans. This is Ross, the host of the Pigskin Tales podcast. I just need a few moments of your time to talk about the host of the Pigskin Dispatch podcast, Darren Hayes. He's expanded the Pigpen to search out information on the history of all team sports. It's a quest to find out about the competitors, teams, and places chronicled throughout athletic history through the uniforms and gear the participants used and wore. And he is taking you, the listener, with him on this educational journey to preserve sports history on the Sports Jersey Dispatch, found here on the Sports History Network. His newest podcast, called Jersey Dispatch, is all based on the jerseys that all the greats used to wear. You can find Darren Hayes and the Pigskin Dispatch podcast, as well as Jersey Dispatch, on your favorite podcast provider multiple times each week. So remember that Darren Hayes, the host of the Pigskin Dispatch and Jersey Dispatch podcasts, is found right here on the Sports History Network.